This is episode number 32 with Mary Shores. Welcome to the Rise Higher podcast. I'm your host, Stephanie Kwong, and each week I'll bring you an inspiring guest with an empowering message to help you rise higher and live your best life. Each guest shares their time of struggle and setback and what specific mindsets, tools, practices, or habits they use to overcome so that you can apply them to your life. This show is to remind you that you're not alone and that there's always a pathway up. Thanks for spending some time with me today. I'm grateful to be on this journey with you. Our struggles are a call for us to rise. So here we go. Let's dive deep now so we can rise higher together. Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Rise Higher podcast. Thank you guys so much for hanging with me today and with my awesome guest, Mary Shores. Now, Mary is an incredibly inspiring businesswoman, author, and entrepreneur who founded her now eight-figure business empire at age 24. Now, Mary didn't start out as a successful businesswoman and author. Before she built the life that she has now, she was abandoned at a young age and tragically lost her first child before she had the courage to rise higher and climb out of her rock bottom and started rewriting her story, changing her beliefs, and ultimately her life. Now, Mary opens up in this episode, revisiting past traumas and sharing what she learned in order to really dive deep into the possibilities of breaking through those struggles to become the best version of herself that she can be. And she's got a lot of incredible insights and practices to support you in that too. So if you've ever felt hindered by your past or unsure of the choices you're making for your future, you are going to love all the insights that Mary shares today. Now, some of the things that we chat about today are Mary's cleanse or clog theory, which is everything you do or say will either cleanse or clog you, how to change the patterns in your subconscious mind, the importance of making a conscious commitment to improvement, a few daily practices that will support you in shifting your perspective, how to be in alignment with your highest potential, why the way we tell our stories impact how we feel, how to follow your choices like a blueprint for your life, and that trauma is not permanent and we have the power to process and heal it, and of course, so much more. So if you guys are ready, let's go ahead and do this and drop in with Mary. So we've got Mary Shores on the Rise Higher podcast. Mary, welcome. Thank you so much for being a guest to being on the show. I've been so excited to interview you and I cannot wait to learn
it's
from you as well.
It's absolutely my pleasure to be here and I appreciate so much the opportunity. Thank you.
Of course. Well, and I know that our very dear friend, Josh Trent, had connected us up. And I just love saying this because it's just such a testament to you. He gets affected by people, but not always to the point of where he literally raves about them. And he just said the greatest things about you. And also that your episode on his podcast was one of the all-time top 10 favorites. So I have a feeling
that might happen here as well.
Perfect. So I'd love for you to share a bit about your story. I know we chatted before we started recording, but you really rose up from a lot of challenge in your life. And so I'd love for you to kind of open up and share about where you came from to where you've gotten to now.
Absolutely, I would love to. You know, a lot of times I hear these really interesting and like big deal introductions of myself, either like through a speech or, you know, maybe being on a podcast. And I think, wow, you know, that's really great to highlight where I'm at. And it's like eight-figure business, best-selling book, you know, she's got all these things going for her. But my story didn't start out there. It actually started out quite the opposite. And so when everything was good when I was born, just kind of went downhill from there. But, you know, I was just born to someone that has some mental challenges. And my mother and father got divorced when I was super young, like around 3, and I was sent off to live with some relatives because my mom was in an unstable place at that time in her life, and she couldn't really support herself, like let alone children. So myself and my newborn sister were sent off to live with my great great aunt and uncle. And just so in case you don't know, great great means that they're elderly. And, but it was okay because like, I wasn't in any danger, but from a psychological standpoint, the removal, like for someone who's 3, your survival depends on this connection that you have with a parent. And so to break that connection actually was really devastating to me when I was young. And it led to some deep-seated abandonment issues that, and actually I really learned much more recently while I was on an ayahuasca retreat, which is a story for another show, but recently learned like how much of my thinking is very rooted in fear-based thinking. So even though I've got all this success, right? Even though I don't sit here and look broken, a lot of what has driven me throughout my life has been this fear-based processing. And that all comes from that early childhood. You know, everyone's always telling you to do your inner child work. And I always think, I don't know how to do that. I don't know what you're talking about, but it's real, you know, it's a real thing. And so I lived with these relatives for a small handful of years. I was returned to my mother at the age of 6, and she had gotten remarried. And that was kind of strange, you know, like showing up at, she picked me up and she basically said, this is Alex. I want you to call him dad now. He's your dad. Yes, just like that.
Just like
and that.
That
I would be returning home, but without my sister. And so that really affected my next 10 years profoundly. Just, you know, my sister, there's a bond there that I can't imagine what the people in like the concentration camps and all of that went through because, you know, just that separation or, you know, more recently the border separations and the things happening there. It's just like, these are crippling people. This is creating damage in our world and it's not cool. But you know, I adjusted to life and I certainly didn't have a torturous childhood. I don't want to give that impression. There was a lot of things that I felt like, you know, my mother at the end of the day was able to give me so much more than what her mother had given you. Because if she was sitting here telling you her story of early childhood, it was bad. It was like horror story bad. Okay. So really in the end of the day, when I look at this situation, instead of looking at it as a way of like, she's horrible or she's terrible, I really do credit her for being able to give me a life that she never had any chance to have when she was young. But, you know, history repeats itself and she got divorced again and remarried again. And I was 16 at that time. And she decided that I wasn't really part of the package. So I was actually booted out to be on my own. So it was actually, you know, this is one of these like true rags to riches deals here. I was out on my own at 16. I was literally a juvenile trying to make it in an adult world. I still managed to graduate high school, even though I had no guidance or no support whatsoever. But then I got to become a teen mom. And so right after high school, I graduated, I started at the local community college and I got pregnant. Yay me.
And were you living on your own at that time too? So when you left, you were 16, wow.
I actually moved in with a friend and his sister. They were living together. She had a small child and they had room for me. So I was kind of a couch surfer in their little apartment that they had. And, so, I mean, it was just a different living standard than what I was used to. You know, I was used to living in a subdivision in a middle-class household. This was a drastic change.
Yeah.
There was a lot of things that, you know, but to me, honestly, it was fun. You know, it was like, it felt like a lot of freedom and fun and just my story could have turned out a lot different. Let's just put it that way. So anyway, this part of my life when I was going through this pregnancy, I was actually really happy during that time because mm-hmm. here I knew I was having a little girl, decided to name her Haley. You know, that whole pregnancy is so special and you've got this human growing inside of you. And I felt like here's my opportunity to really like have this ultimate love and connection with this little human. And she was born in 1992, but she had suffered a severe debilitating brain damage throughout birth. So she had lack of oxygen to the brain for over 5 minutes. And what that looks like is she was on full life support, number one. But when she was expected to live for 3 days, that was her life expectancy. And she was blind. She was deaf. She didn't have human reflexes or instincts, so she couldn't swallow or suck a bottle. She had to be fed through a gastrostomy tube in her stomach. And there was a lot of like machines and things keeping her alive. She was on 19 medications every single day that I was at 19 responsible. And this is like scary stuff, like phenobarbital and morphine, because she was also in a lot of physical pain that she was going through. But, you know, sometimes we refer to people as a vegetable, and that's basically the category that she would fit into. It's like there was no hope. There was very little brain activity. So she lived for a year and a half. And during that period of time, you know, I'm living in and out of the Children's Hospital in Indianapolis. It's called Riley's Children's Hospital. And during when you're there, you know, I'm 19, I'm 20, I'm just seeing things that you can just never unsee in life between the cancer units, the burn units, the car accidents, the being with other parents as their children are fading away and passing away. You know, this is like when all my friends were in college and going to frat parties and, you know, basically having the time of their life. You know, I'm in this life or death struggle.
Yeah. And also, I'm sure the trauma that you felt of being so excited to have your baby girl, and this is how you had to be with her, was in this state versus having her in your arms and maybe what you had decided or seen in your mind of what it would look like.
I'm so glad that you pick up on that because it's so true. Like the bigger tragedy over her death, because we always think of death as a tragedy, but the truth is her beginnings were the tragedy because that's when, you know, the story's over. That's when, you know, this child has no chance of growing up and getting a driver's license and going to school. I mean, she never even had one vaccination because she wasn't. And I know there's like a whole vaccination controversy right now, but this predated all of that. You know, it was very unusual in those days for a child not to be vaccinated, but her system was too fragile to receive a vaccination. And it's so true because all of those hopes and wishes and desires that I had with Haley were just gone in a moment, in 5 minutes. And later on, I found out that when they took me in for that emergency C-section, they were actually trying to save my life because a hemorrhage had happened, which is what caused the damage. It was actually a hemorrhage on her umbilical cord. 1 in 6.5 million chances. And it's like, I must be really lucky to beat those odds. But she, you know, I was in denial in the beginning months because, you know, miracles happen and you always like you'll find the one story where someone's left hemisphere of their brain took over for the damaged hemisphere. And, you know, I wasn't certainly smart enough at 19 years old to understand that. I just knew there was always a chance. And so I kind of had that never give up,
keeping that hope
with her
alive. Yeah. Within you.
Yeah. And I had to eventually wrestle with myself and accept that this was the quality of the life that she was going to have. And to this day, because I live in Champaign, Illinois, and the weather here, we have all four seasons. So, you know, the winters can be rough. And I will see a mother or even a grandmother pushing a wheelchair, you know, a full outfitted wheelchair, you know, where the people's heads are strapped in. And and all of that. And I realize every time when I see that, like, that would be me right now.
Hmm.
That would be her.
Yep.
And that would be me.
How did you, because I know you were so young at that time anyway, being 19, 20, and pretty much on your own. Were you able, did you have any tools or did you do anything to really support yourself through that time?
No, I was a complete vegetable. When I look at myself, when I look at pictures of myself during that time period, it's a total deer in the headlights look. Now, I know that now to be pretty severe PTSD, mm-hmm. but like there's no facial expression. There's no life behind me. I was literally living out of the, what do they call it? The amygdala. I was literally living out of the amygdala 24/7. I mean, I had no food, money for food.
Yeah.
Like you're not thinking of tools.
Survival. When, pure survival. Right. Fight, flight.
I mean, we didn't even. Yeah. Yeah, we didn't have a place even like at the Ronald McDonald's house, because what would happen is we would take her in for a doctor's appointment and they would admit her for a month. Mm-hmm. But you know, that's not like a plant, like the children that had cancer or something, their families would have more of a, like a chance to be at the Ronald McDonald House or something like that to have some support. Mm-hmm. But we really didn't. So it was ever like $3 we might've had in our pocket is what went in the vending machine or, you know, what we could buy at the cafeteria. And we, like I said, we slept on the floor in the emergency room, waiting room. Well, along with a lot of other families that were in the exact same position we were in.
Mm. And so after that, I know your daughter passed, mm-hmm. right? And then what transpired after that for you?
So after that, and I love that you asked me that because I always, you know, I tell people, and it's in my book, especially in chapter 2, it's all about rewriting your story. Because here's the thing, our stories are so important, and the stories that we tell ourselves about ourselves, mm-hmm. they become our identity in big ways.
Huge.
Especially if, you know, we're telling that story in these tragic ways, it reinforces that some negative programming that can lead you to a victim mentality. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I did everything right in those days and I was like going to therapy and supporting myself, because it wasn't true. Like the truth is I sort of went in after she passed away, I went down a downward spiral. So a few things were happening. And this is more from a psychological standpoint. Like on one hand, there was this, I did some regressing back into like some teenage behavior. Like I felt like I wanted to go out and party and, you know, I wanted to be with my friends and I wanted to have a good time. I was 20.
Mm-hmm.
And there was also this like feeling that I was behind my peers because my peers were starting to graduate. I mean, some of them were starting to already have a bachelor's degree or at least an associate's degree, and I had nothing,
mm-hmm.
you know? So I felt like I was never going to be able to lead the life that I deserved to lead because I had these now limitations. You know, I had this like sort of broken heart, number one. I had PTSD, which I did not even know until something like 2011 or 2012.
Wow.
So, like 3 decades later, I find out I have PTSD from all of this. But you know, the PTSD was more about all of the things that I witnessed in the hospital and just going through it. Right. And then, yeah, this thing about the peers was sort of a big thing. Cause I'd love to tell you this big empowerment story. Like, yay, I started this business from all this place of empowerment, but it was really the opposite. Like I felt like a complete failure. I mean, imagine, put yourself, you're 20, you're 21, your friends are graduating college. And what do I have? A messed up life. Like I've been out on my own for years now. I have nothing. I'm not going to amount to anything. My stepfather I'm not downplaying my stepfather, but like, you know, he would say things to me like, oh, you're not going to amount to anything because you don't have straight A's or whatever. And I didn't know that was all bullshit at the time. Right.
Yeah.
You know,
and we're listening to that, what those suggestions, what they're telling us. And we're thinking that this is true. And then it becomes, like you said, our identity and our belief system. And we start to live that out in our adult life.
It's so true. So, you know, quite out of desperation, I decided to start my own business because I thought, well, it's like the only chance I have. I'm going to start this business. But the unusual thing was the opportunity I had to start a business was actually a collection agency. So I wasn't choosy about the kind of business I wanted to start. But like when I was growing up, you know, all the other little girls, they wanted to play house and I wanted to play bank. So I had a bank.
It's in your blood.
It is in my blood. It's so true. I had a bank in my garage and I would have all the other kids have accounts at my bank and they would all like come through on their big wheels and their bicycles and tricycles. And I would like hand them out money and then they would go and play house with my fake money. Cause that was like part of the game that I required. But,
I love it.
So the thing is like, you know, that's who I was born to be. There was something in there all the time. Right. And your circumstances will lead you to miraculous places when you let them. And so I had, after Haley died and I felt like a complete loser, I took a job as a telemarketer. And ironically, that job, it was so necessary for my future development. My parents had ran this collection agency. They were going out of business. So I saw an opportunity. And the opportunity I saw was like, I could maybe do this. Like, because, you know, I thought that because my parents owned a collection agency and I worked there when I was young and my job was like to fold letters and lick stamps, I thought that made me a good CEO.
Oh.
Yeah.
Until you learned that. That was not the case.
No. So in a lot of ways, that ridiculous naivete served me so well.
Yeah. You just jumped right in.
These circumstances were not good. I mean, my mom owning this business, she literally like left town in the middle of the night with a semi and all of her shit. And I was kind of, on the one hand, left holding the bag because I was inserting myself into the situation, right? But you know what I did? I looked at her clients. I looked at who was bringing her money in. And I had actually been helping her under the false premise that she was going to give me a job, which didn't happen. And I was volunteering for her office. So I had built some relationships with these clients. And I wrote several of them a letter and said, you know, hey, I think I could do this. Would you give me a chance? There was more to the letter than that, but that's what I remember. And anyway, so enough of them said yes, right? Like actually like 75 or some said yes. I don't know, but enough to get my feet wet, enough to get me started. These people were kind to me. You know, it was the perfect incubator for me to develop my ideas. Now, right from the beginning, owning this collection agency was not my cup of tea. So it was not like nobody grows up and is like, yeah, I'm going to grow up and be a debt collector. And that was not me either. You know, I thought I was going to be like Martha freaking Stewart and have an office, you know, up in a New York high rise or something. So that was my vision for my future.
That was it. Not debt collector.
Right. Or, you know, maybe supermodel or, you know, pop star.
Yeah.
I don't know. Whatever.
I love it.
Married to some famous person. But anyway, that did not work out for me. But right away, I was not into the negativity that the rest of the industry was in. And I was very aware that there was a huge negative stigma to the collections industry, which is actually well-deserved in my opinion, because debt collectors are really known for some horrific practices. And these are some practices that I see all the time, and it's real and it's demoralizing and it takes humanity out of what they're doing, and it's wrong. And so I never wanted to be a part of that world. And I decided I wanted to take a sales approach to collections. Well, that failed. Like, that did not work. And you would think though that it would work, right? Like logic says, oh, great. You know, sell them on the idea of how it's going to improve their credit score and how they're going to get a better interest rate on their mortgage and their car loans and credit card deals. But turns out no one cares.
They didn't care.
No one cares. And my competition they were like scaring people into paying. And so they won out every time, because who are you going to pay? The guy that you need to get off your back or the nice guy? You know, that's right. Because we're wired for what's called negativity bias. Negativity mm-hmm. bias makes us have a stronger reaction to negative stimuli than we do to positive stimuli.
Mm-hmm. So I was about to say that's just what happens in our brain as well.
It's so true. Yeah. And it's natural. Yeah. It's part of being human and it's fine. It was mm-hmm. a survival technique that served to keep us alive like a million years ago or however mm-hmm. old we are as a species, which I don't really know. But anyway, it failed for another reason too, which is the more important one, which is that it didn't address the shame and the unworthiness that people feel just by owing money. So even if they haven't gotten that phone call, or even if they haven't addressed the situation, just having the knowledge that you owe money makes mm-hmm. you feel unworthy. And mm-hmm. When I figured that out, that changed everything. Because mm-hmm. what I was able to do was create an entire communication strategy that turned all of that upside down. And mm-hmm. I literally had this aha moment when one day I looked at the phone and I said out loud, I want the next person who calls to be happier at the end of the call than they were at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And now I had a lot of elbow grease to put in to figure that out. That was like the starting moment back in 2005. But
yeah, didn't you have, because I think I read you were at a personal development workshop and two things came into your awareness that really changed the game. Mm-hmm. And it was the what you focus on grows, which absolutely. And also the always know your outcome, right? Those are the two pieces.
It's so true. Like I'm so jealous of the younger generations, like the millennials, because they've known that all along. Nobody told me that until I was like 34. And I was like, oh my gosh, mm-hmm. this is brilliant. And it was really it was the starting place for so many things. It's a moment within a moment that just changes everything. Because I took these two concepts, like always know your outcome and what you focus on grows. And I didn't think to myself, I want to focus on being a billionaire. Although that would be fine too. But my focus was just like, how can I make these people feel happy? Because by the way, they were always yelling at me. Like, how can I want to focus on their happiness. So I went to my entire staff and they thought I was crazy. And I was like, the goal is no longer to collect money. You will only be measured on how you make the person happy. I had no idea how I was going to accomplish any of this, but it was coming out of my mouth. It was like, here I'm talking. I don't know what I'm talking about, but I'm talking. Mm-hmm. And my outcome was just the same thing. Like, I want the person to be happy. And then but then that magical reticular activating system like kicked in and I started getting these ideas. And one of the ideas that I got was to like, my tagline a lot of times is everything you say, everything you do, every word that comes out of your mouth, every action you take, every choice you make in the thinnest sliced moments of life is either creating a deeper connection or it's driving a disconnection. And so if mm-hmm. I needed to make this goal of creating happiness, and by the way, it's not just about creating happiness. These people are seriously pissed off. All right. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm trying to tell them they owe like $2,000 to the hospital. They are not wanting to hear that. Mm-hmm. That is not easy to make them happy. But I figured it out. And the things I figured out were that we have triggers. We have triggers that put us into our fight or flight. And one of the things that I could control, because we always want to look at, you know, what can we control in these situations? The only thing I had to control was the words that I was speaking, the words mm-hmm. that my staff were speaking. So I thought, what if, let's just try this. We'll just take out all the negative words.
And see what happens.
See what happens.
Yeah.
And the result was that people were able to show up and advocate for themselves because they felt safer. They didn't mm-hmm. feel under attack. They were able to create this connection and build trust and rapport just by eliminating negative words. Now, there was a lot more that came through after that, but that was the first thing we did.
And I think that's so powerful. I just want to, because I know a lot of people who are listening, you know, this can apply to their outside life of how they can shift their outer world, but also their inner world. And just what you said, and I wanted to highlight, is the words that you use. You're either building that rapport or you're breaking it down.
That's right.
And that's with other people, right? And the moment we start to break it down with using negative words, what are they going to do? Get defensive and shut down, and all of a sudden you can't get through. But when you are able to approach with love and compassion or an understanding, then they can open up and feel more safe to you. And I think that also goes for ourselves. When we are mean and self-judgy and harsh, we shut down to ourselves versus when we can actually open up to, because self-love is a big thing I talk about, compassion and kindness and understanding and patience with ourselves. There's also a spaciousness for us to, you know, feel better, feel good, feel happy, because I know that was the goal of yours by changing the language. And also just the ability to take bigger risks and dream bigger and go for the things that we want.
You know, I'm so glad that you said all of that. And it's so brilliant, because why on earth would you ever have this debt collecting lady who's nice to people on a podcast? Like, you probably wouldn't, you know, that's not what your audience is about. No. But there's such a deeper meaning to this work. And so several years into it, I definitely, like, people started, they were taking my workshops, and there's a lot more to it than just negative words. Like, there's a whole system, and it takes me about a day to train people on how to use it. But like, I just started having people approach me, and they would say, you know, this system didn't just change my business, it changed my life. Because they started showing up differently in their relationships. They started understanding the concept. I call it cleanse or clog. Like, everything you say, everything you do is either going to cleanse you or clog you. They started applying that to every area of their life. And they, and literally, like, in the last just year, I had an employee come to me and tell me all the prescription medications that she's now no longer on.
Wow.
And I'm talking about, not just antidepressants, but I'm talking about like other things too. I don't remember which ones, so I don't want to say, but I like
a lot of meds that she was able to get off of, probably because she just got out of her own fight flight, right? In her mind of like,
yeah,
what she was saying to herself and to others.
Once we can calm down all those chemicals, you know, once we can understand the power of the subconscious mind, and the truth is you don't have to understand any of that. But if you can just put in some daily practices to start making small pivots and small changes, then over a long period of time, you see a lot of change, and we're all changing. Mm-hmm. Like, who I am now in my 40s looks nothing like when I was in my 20s. Or when I was in my 30s. But, you know, here's the thing. When you take that personal development box off the shelf and you open it up, there's no freaking putting it back and putting it back on the shelf.
True story.
True story, right? I love it.
Can you talk a bit about the cleanse and clog process, or what that means? So that, because I think that would be a really good tool for the listeners to be able to take on and start to apply to their life. I'm familiar with it, but I'd love for you to explain more.
So
of it.
You know what? I tell you what, I love cleanse or clog, and I want to acknowledge that concept right there, that idea was the thing that got me a book deal with Hay House, and it is so simple, but yet so life-changing. And I have people write to me all the time that like cleanser clog is their new Bible. I want to say, before I talk about this, I want to just give you a little bit of a premise for it. We're living in this time, and we're very lucky to be here right now, but we're living in this time that I think that probably the majority of your audience is at least open to the concept that we create our own realities, and that
100%.
Right. And that infinite possibilities are available to us all. It's like we've already taken that box off the shelf, and hopefully we've not just taken the personal development box, but we've taken the spirituality box off that shelf too. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's like, we're striving to live that more wholehearted, spiritually balanced life and still have it all and be glamorous and all that great stuff. Right. But how do you do that? So one of the things, going right back to this concept of everything is creating connection or driving disconnection, I thought, you know, everything you're doing is either cleansing a situation or clogging it. And so when we hear the term infinite possibilities, I know my mind immediately makes the jump to that means all great things are going to happen to me from now on. Which is total bullshit. That is not how it works, because we are here to experience the entire spectrum of everything that is meant to happen to a human. And that means all of the suffering that I went through, all of the misery and the joy. And we don't like those feelings, but if we cut ourselves off from that spectrum of emotions. That's what causes PTSD, because then we cannot experience the joy and the love in all of these things. Okay. Mm-hmm. So understand that infinite possibilities does not mean you're meeting your highest potential, honey, but it does mean that we're here. Anything could happen, anything at all. Like, I could get in a rocket ship tomorrow. Probably not, because I've got to work tomorrow, but maybe on Saturday and go to the moon.
You never know.
Never know, because Tesla might call me.
Anything is possible. Exactly.
That's right. But so are the bad things, right? Like, I might go on Oprah, or I might just get like a story about me in the local newspaper. Great. But it's all the choices you make. You know, like, it's all the choices you make in every moment that are leading you like a blueprint through your life. You're not aware of it, but you can be. And I always say awareness of your choices is the key to freedom, because what you're really looking for here is freedom. You're looking for freedom to connect to that best life possible. Not always going to be happy all the time, and that's okay. But like, understanding that you take this concept of everything you say, everything you do, every action you take is creating your life, and you break it down to understand, like, in these, what is it, like 7 areas of life or 10, the one that's on the life wheel. But like, how are you cleansing and clogging your relationships? And when you understand that, and you can really deeply understand it in your body, then maybe sending a text message that says, why did you do this XYZ thing? Is that going to cleanse, or is it going to clog?
Mm-hmm.
What about in my, like, I love talking about it through food. It's saying, mm-hmm. like, if I need to go on a diet, or I want to go and I want to lose 20 pounds, you know, I can like invest in some kind of complicated diet system like paleo or keto or whatever. And I'm not saying anything against those systems, but I don't have time for that. And it's too complicated for me, and it's not integratable into my life. But what if I just look at a piece of food and I say, if I eat this watermelon, will it cleanse me or clog me? If I mm-hmm. if I eat this Snickers bar, is it going to cleanse me or clog me? And we know the answer. If I send mm-hmm. this text message to my significant other or my child or my mother, is it going to cleanse our relationship or clog it? And what's the more important thing? Because every time you clog, you create a deeper disconnection. Every mm-hmm. time you cleanse, you create massive connection. Every time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Every single time.
And it's in all those micro decisions that you're making that completely stack up, that then bring you towards where you want to go, or move you away towards it, or away from it.
And in my spiritual, I'm really like, there was a part in my life where I really decided to take a spiritual path. So personal development, I think for a lot of people, graduates into spiritual development, which that's mm-hmm. where it's at. Like, wow. Like, that's where the juice is at. And when I started wanting to understand ancient concepts, the thing that kept coming up for me over and over again was free will, like wanting to understand free will. Like, what does that mean? We get this opportunity for free will, because it really feels like it sucks to me. But like, maybe you should just make
some days
be a lot better.
Yeah.
That way. But, you know, I wanted to be an archaeologist too. I wanted to be a businesswoman and own a bank, mm-hmm. but I also wanted to be the female Indiana Jones. And so that side of me was all about reading ancient texts all the time. And so we've had things like the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Nag Hammadi texts and all of these really interesting writings sort of appear to us in this generation out of nowhere. And in mm-hmm. one of those, they're talking about the concept of free will. And they're boiling it down to this very simple meaning that we have been given, like our whole purpose. I know we always hear these different purposes for being here, but one of the purposes for this human life and what we're trying to learn as this species of human beings is to follow the path of right and wrong. In every mm-hmm. moment, there is a right and a wrong decision. It doesn't always mm-hmm. feel that way, because sometimes they're so subtle between the difference. You know, like, what if you're faced with a choice of whether to euthanize your parent? You know, mm-hmm. what is the right and wrong in that? And so if yeah. we really can dial back these concepts, and what I believe, and I really believe that the reason Cleanser Clog is so powerful is because it helps us in 2 seconds check in. You know, I want to have this amazing career. How am I cleansing or clogging my career decisions? Am I showing up for work on time? Am I snapping back on my boss? Am I arguing too much? Am I responsive to my emails? You know, these are cleanse or clog moments. How am I cleansing or clogging my finances? Am I getting my tax return and the first thing I do is book a vacation to Maui, which I'm not saying is bad, but it is bad if you owe $10,000 in debt, because at the end of the year, you're still going to have that debt. You know, so it's like, how are you cleansing or clogging your finances? How are you cleansing or clogging your spiritual and personal development? You know, are you spending hours wasting time on Facebook, or are you feeding your mind with things that are going to fulfill you and help you grow and learn?
Yep, absolutely. I love that. And it's simple and yet so profound, and something that people can do immediately. It's just checking in with yourself and trusting, because you, like you said, we know if it's going to cleanse or clog us. And it's just that willingness to say, okay, I know this is going to clog me, so I'm going to say no. And what will cleanse me instead and move towards that?
Yeah. And I want to add just a little caveat to that, that it's not about perfection. So you're going to make mistakes, and that's okay. What I've learned is there's an 80-20 rule that goes along with this. And what it means is, like, my goal is to make cleansing connected choices 80% of the time. And 20% of the time, hey, I'll have my chocolate cake. I'll have that extra glass of coffee or extra glass of wine, maybe. But if you think about it right now, if 80% of the time in your life, in all the significant areas of your life, whatever they may be, if you made cleansing connected choices and hit that 80% mark, how different would your life be in, say, 45 days from now? It really, honestly, it will alter your life. You know, Mel Robbins, who I love and adore, has the 5-second rule. And I feel like my concept, cleanse or clog, is every bit as impactful as the 5-second rule. I really believe that.
And for those of you who don't know the 5-second rule, it's so powerful. It's literally, you have a 5-second window from the moment your brain wants to decide to do something. And even if it's stopped by fear, you've got 5 seconds to take the action and go for it, so that your brain doesn't start kicking in with all the reasons why you should stop or hold yourself back, or the fears pop up more deadly than they would if you would have just taken that action. I know that's something that you are so masterful at teaching, is how to get out of your own way so that you can achieve more of what you want. And obviously a big part of whether we're able to move towards what we desire or not has to do with how our brain is operating. So I know that you study a lot of neuroscience as well. I'd love for you to break it down, kind of how our brain works, and then maybe how we can partner with it to be able to repattern and reprogram the neural pathways so that we're working congruently with our brain versus against it.
Yeah. You know, let's have fun with that piece of brilliant machinery up in our heads.
Yes.
Like, there's a trillion some odd neuron. There's more connections in our brain than in the galaxy. That's really freaky to me. Like, that gets me really excited, because a lot of times I think, you know, people talk about space as in the cosmos being the final frontier. And I think it's consciousness. I think consciousness is where it's at. And I think that it drives and inspires me to learn as much about the workings of our brain. Here's the thing. Our brain and our bodies are like libraries, and they store everything that ever happens to us. I believe since pre-birth, and if I wanted to go all spiritual on you, I would say, you know, we're really inheriting things even from our ancestors. And actually, science is now proving that to be true, because we know about epigenetics. We know about how the DNA mutates itself and then passes down. So a trauma that I suffer, like the trauma that I suffered in my 20s with my daughter, is definitely embedded into my DNA. I love one of the doctors I love to listen to. His name is Dr. Joseph Tafur. And he's an MD and a shaman. And he talks about that trauma is like these dragons that embed themselves onto your DNA, and they actually stay there and make change. But see, we can do something about that. We can process, and we can actually remove these traumas. But the tendency is, because we've really moved into this positive psychology movement that I don't believe is really serving us on the level that what we need, because what we need is to be able to process our emotions when the shit hits the fan. Because it's not just because you're not thinking about it all the time, it's manifesting itself in your daily behaviors, in your personality, in your attitude, in the way that you make decisions. Like, just like I told you, I recently discovered how much of my decision making is fear-based. That was shocking to me because I am like pumped up on the empowerment posse, if you know what I mean. That was shocking to me to discover that, right?
Well, and you said you discovered the PTSD when in 2011-ish.
Yeah, but I didn't think that was any big deal. Like, you think how, you know, I'm like, I got this. I mean, there was so much work to do even after getting that diagnosis. You know, first of all, it terrified me, but it also broke open my patterns. And see, those patterns are what is controlled by what's in your subconscious mind. And we can change the patterns. And you know what? I never want to say that like my way is the only way. My way is a way and it works if that's the thing you're down with, which it's things like creating. And I know we have a free gift for you today, so that's a great place to talk about it. But in my Daily Desires diary, it's a daily journal that I would love for you guys to fill out. We'll give you all a copy of it for free. But what we do,
and I'll have the links in the show notes.
Thank you.
For that.
Thank you. That's so generous of you.
Of course.
It's like, if you make a commitment every single day, because this is about the repetition, okay? And it's not 30 days and then stop. It's about the repetition, like really making a conscious commitment to do this, that every day I want you to just give me three things that you're grateful for. Now, I am a neuro nerd. I'm not a neurologist, and I don't play one on TV, and I did not stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night, but I did stay at the Hard Rock over the weekend.
Woo.
That is a party place. I did not go to the party, but here's the thing that, you know, I came from a Christian background, and I think that gratitude is the foundation of every religion, of every spiritual practice or yoga or whatever. Like, I have not heard one person said gratitude is bad, like smoking, you shouldn't do that. But, you know, I guess I was taught to believe as a child that I owed this God in the sky a debt of daily gratitude. And I learned that's not really what it's about, but that the way that our brains are built, we have neural networks. We have these patterns that are created in these pathways that are created in our mind. And this is what is going to ultimately create our personality and our identity and all of these things. And also the chemistry, like the chemicals that surge through us, create feelings and emotions. Gratitude, it's like it's reinforcing the positivity networks in your subconscious mind. So one way that you can affect your mindset and basically change your brain programming and your brain chemistry at the same time is to pony up three things you're grateful for every single day. And I have been doing this for years. And within 7 months of creating that daily practice, I had a book deal with Hay House, and like so many miracles happened. Marianne Williamson says, a miracle is but a shift in perception.
Perspective.
And it's so beautiful, and it's so true. And a daily gratitude practice will give you that, because it's actually priming, like I like to call it a muscle, but it's not really a muscle. It's more of like neurons and synapses and nerdy stuff. But let's just say it's like priming the muscle in your brain that has the capability of looking for things in your world that are positive and pointing them out to you. And then once you start focus, like what you focus on grows.
It's on grows.
So when you just take 5 seconds to say, what am I grateful for today? If you need some prompts, I have a Declaring Gratitude Facebook group that you guys are welcome to join. We put daily prompts in there like, hey, why am I grateful for my pet or my child or my book that I'm reading or writing or whatever's going on? So that one just really works miracles in your subconscious. The next one is, I want you to say three things every day that you're proud of. You know, especially as women, I feel like we're not taught to be celebratory of our small wins. We're actually taught to be humble. You know, studies show that if you ask a guy like, hey, you just won the whatever, like, how did you do that? They'll be like, I'm awesome. What are you telling? You know, are you kidding me? I'm freaking awesome. That's why I got the big deal. But if you ask a woman, she's going to not give the credit to herself. And this is like studies that have been done on this. She's going to say, well, so-and-so really helped me, or I got lucky. You know, we got lucky. We don't attribute the win to ourselves. Well, we can change this, because if you just take a moment to say, what are three things that I did right today? What are my three small wins? You know, maybe it's that you got your kids on time to school for the first time in a month. Maybe it's that you woke up on time. Maybe it's that you closed that big deal. Maybe it's that you connected with a friend over coffee. I don't care what it is. I just want you to do it, because by doing it, there's a certain strategic thinking center in your brain. And the studies suggest and show that when you take a moment to celebrate your small wins, what happens is your brain is refiring those moments, and it's embedding it into your strategic thinking centers, so that when you have a problem, which you will, when you have a problem, you will more easily think of the solution. You know, I love to say, if you ever had like a grandpa or an uncle or someone in your life that used to fish, they would always, you might've seen it in a movie then.
Yes.
So they would always have like this big fish story. Like, oh, I caught the fish. And when you first hear the story, the fish is like 5 inches. But then like 10 years later, that fish is like 2 feet long and 50 pounds. Mm-hmm. Well, because what happens is when you retell these celebratory stories, they become bigger in our minds.
Oh, yeah. And you're reliving it too again and again.
And you're reinforcing a very important neural connection in these strategic thinking centers. And what's really cool too, is you're recreating the chemicals that happened at the time. So you could watch yourself. Mm-hmm. You could like tell a story of when you like made the cheerleading team. And the next thing you know, you're flooded with all of these like really happy hormones because you're re-experiencing it. The same goes true for telling a negative story too.
Absolutely. Well, and that's interesting that you say that, because there's been times where I've talked to certain people and they've hopped on the phone and they just go into the story of something negative that's happened, and I can feel the emotion. And the longer they go, I'm like, wait, hold on one second. I go, do you really want to spend this time on the phone talking about this? Like, is it actually going to support you? Or are you literally just reliving it and you're re-feeling all of that again in your body? And do you want that? Mm-hmm. And most of the times it'll like stop them. They're like, no, I don't want to refill this again. Unless it's moving towards a solution.
Right.
Right. That they're sharing it, that's what they wanted support on. But it is really important what you say to yourself. And I wanted to actually go back to the gratitude piece, because I actually do gratitude practice with, I have two of my best girlfriends and we text every single morning.
Yeah, that's
so we
what
have a whole
I do
chain.
Too.
We've been doing it for over a year and a half now. We've been going strong every single day. And as we do it though, or as I do it, it's not just about doing the practice and texting it and getting it off, or if you're writing it in a journal, but really actually experiencing the true feeling of what it feels like when you're giving gratitude to whatever you're saying you're grateful for.
Yeah.
Like really feeling
and
it.
And I want to say to the audience, don't expect that you're going to feel that way every day, every time. You know what I mean?
True.
Like listen, with my gratitude sisters, because I do the very same thing. I have three other girlfriends. So there's four of us in our group. And ours started in January. It was January 27th, 2015. So we are almost on we'll be going on our fourth year of doing this. Mm-hmm. And all of us have dramatically changed our lives. Like literally one girl, she quit her job as a corporate attorney for Yahoo and like went and lived in a commune. Cause that was her dream. Mm-hmm. Like she just wanted to try that on. Right. But all of us have made major life changes for the better because of this gratitude practice. And it's such an easy constant to have in our life. You know, so many things, times we want to make change, but we adopt these really complicated and overwhelming ideas and treatment plans, if you will, that really aren't sustainable or integratable, but the gratitude is. And I always know, like I remember being so touched by a post one day in my gratitude group where the girl texted and she said, I'm grateful today because I have a clean toothbrush. Now I knew that meant that she was having a really rough day, right? Mm-hmm. But how amazing is it that through that terrible circumstance that you might be going through today, that you take a moment to realize, you know what? I have a toothbrush. And probably more than 50% of the people on this earth, which is shocking to hear, but
they don't
have one because we think everyone is like Americans or Westerners, and that's not the case. And so to be able to be grateful for a soft pillow, you know, or it's not always these big things that happen, but to be able to be grateful, you know, sometimes it's like, I'm just grateful I made it through this day and it's time for bed, right? And that's okay. Yeah. Because the point is that you recognize it.
Yeah, which is so key. And again, it's the whatever you choose to focus on will grow. And in that moment, if you're able to, like you said, just find one thing and you stack it again, it'll make a difference. And even with what you said about finding the things that you're proud of yourself for, funny enough, that's another practice I have, and I do it in the mirror. And I actually scan through my day and think about everything I'm proud of myself for, and then I pick the top three. But the whole point of that is I'm actually looking at all of it, right? I have to find all, like, what are the top ones?
Yeah.
And so now you're priming your brain. You're telling your brain, hey, let's look for all that's good about you. Because it's so easy for us to, because of the way our brains are wired, like, look for what's not good, what's wrong, how could I have been better? I should have, fill in the blank. And this again is it's retraining our brain to scan and look for all that is good and to acknowledge that. And like you said, the celebratory part is so key in firing parts of our brains off. So
it's so true. And let's talk about, you know, like, let's talk about the results of that, you know, over time, because I think that there's a lot of people, new thought leaders, you know, whatever you want to call them, life coaches, that talk about eliminating negative language. And you know, Wayne Dyer was very famous for always saying, change your thoughts, change your life. And I tried. Those are brilliant concepts, but they can't work for every single person. Just like affirmations, you know, affirmations that are not necessarily true can actually cause more damage than good. Because if people don't believe the affirmation, like, oh, I'm rich or I'm skinny or I've got a great job, when all that's bullshit, it will actually cause a negative pathway for the affirmation versus a positive one. So there's a lot more to this stuff, and not everything is cookie cutter to work for every person. But what I have found is that these kind of daily practices work as a shortcut, and the result is that you stop talking to yourself negatively. It's not like that I sit here and I force myself to knock off the negative self-talk, which is absolutely necessary, because you know what? When you try to do that, then the next thing you know, you're judging yourself because you couldn't do it. Right? But if you do, there's a feedback loop. Like if I had my whiteboard right now, I'd draw you a big circle and then you would be wowed by my whiteboard skills. But
I would.
No, it's so bad. Anyway, you know, like this feedback cycle. So instead of like trying to force yourself to change your thoughts, because I don't know about you, but I feel overwhelmed by my thoughts a lot of times, like especially as an entrepreneur. They're just always there, and they're not pretty. And then sometimes they're actually kind of terrible. Like I should be a criminal. But the result of these daily practices is that it's the thing for me that calmed down the other things that needed to go. Like the negative shit needed to go. It was not serving me. It's a total clog. You tell me, like a little bit of self-consciousness or whatever. What was the guy, Geppetto? That was Pinocchio's little fake buddy. I don't know. But like, have a conscience. Yes, it's good to have a conscience, but don't abuse yourself. And that last piece of the Daily Desires Diary is equally important. You're going to tell in your diary every day three things that you desire. And that's my favorite one, because this actually, this little worksheet is my super manifestation tool. I was actually on stage with Abraham Hicks years ago. I was in like the hot seat, and she looked at me and she said, "You're the most powerful manifester we've ever come across." And I laughed and I was like, that is so stupid. But the funny part is, like, when I was sitting in my seat, I only raised my hand like halfway, and I said to myself, I'm going to raise my hand to see if manifestation is really true. And as soon as I got my hand like right here, and I was in like the back of the room, boom. But that was my
get thought. Up here.
I didn't have a question. I was like, let me just go like this so I could see if manifesting is real. That shit is real. And when she told me that, you know, like the whole powerful manifester thing, I thought that's really cool and all, but I don't know how to do it. And so I really started paying attention to how can I quickly and easily manifest the life that I want instead of swirling in all the chaos and the uncertainty of all the things that I absolutely do not want. Because the reality is we spend more time having anxiety about the things we don't want more so than we're working on the action plan to get us the things that we do want.
Mm-hmm. True. Absolutely. And so I love that, like focusing on your desire, priming your mind again, saying, what is it that I desire? What is it that I desire? And writing that down. Yeah, that's so key. So is that you'd say that was your secret to manifestation, is being able to consistently write down the things that you desire?
Well, there's so many things for manifestation. Mm-hmm. That's a quick, easy, down and dirty one that I know works. And it's the one that I think is the perfect starting point. If people really want to learn the powers of manifestation, it's a perfect starting point. But there's so many, like, you know, I've heard it said there's 50,000 veils between us and source. And let me tell you something. You get past like this life and this reality and you see what's on the other side, which I have, you know, because of like the ayahuasca retreat and, you know, other just like mystical experiences that I've had for the recent past. You see how these other dimensions, like I've seen thoughts turn into matter. Like I've seen that. I was like, wow, that is really weird and cool. And okay, I get it now. And there's so much more to it than just the actual act of the manifesting through these daily practices. I'm going to give you two. Do we have time to go over two concepts? Okay.
Quickly. Yeah.
I don't know that I do anything.
I'm looking
quickly
at the time. I was like, I want more. I have so all these questions. Yeah. Go ahead and do two. Let's just do it.
So the first part I want to talk about, and if you listen to any kind of law of attraction, anything, people will talk about the importance of how you feel. Right? Nothing is more important than how you feel. But I don't think we quite get that, because what we think is that means we have to be happy all the time and we have to feel good. I don't necessarily agree. And what I think is that let's talk about empowerment, because empowerment has become this big buzzword lately. And I think whenever I hear a buzzword, like alignment is another one, I really need to like put a definition behind that. So for my purpose of this chat, I'm going to say empowerment is when you know and you understand inside, outside, backwards and forwards, what it is you want. You've got clarity. And number two, you've got at least the first one or two steps of how to move forward, okay? What that feels like is you feel really juiced. If I ask you when you're in this place of empowerment, I'll ask you, on a scale of 0 to 20 right now, how well do you feel?
I'm at about a 14 right now.
That is
excellent. I had a rough night.
Well, 14.
And I had to use self-talk. But this morning, because of that self-talk and really doing these tools, even that you're sharing, it's got me to a better place. But good. Last night, not so good. Much.
Well, wait,
right
what
now,
was your
14.
Last night?
Oh, my goodness. I was probably at like, I would say like a 5 or 6. I woke up and there was something that it just was bothersome for me. Sure. That occurred right before I went to bed and I was woken up by it. And all of a sudden my brain just went into this crazy mean spiral and I just had to put my hands on my heart. And I was like, I just started affirming myself and I was just very gentle. I was like, we're not going to say those things to you right now. You're okay. Steph, you're okay. I've got your back. And old me, you know, would have been just letting those thoughts do its thing and probably lay there all night long ruminating. But yeah, I had to really catch myself and bring myself back to my heart.
Let's focus on the 6 and the 14. Okay. So someone asked me this question a couple of months ago and I said a 7, right? But like most of the time I'm probably like a 17. So here's the thing. It is important how you feel. But the real important thing is knowing when to take action and knowing when to take self-care. So when you were at the 6 yesterday, which is actually why I love that you acknowledge that, like, okay, I'm at a 14 today, but yesterday, ugh, that's okay.
Last night.
So when you are at a 17 or a 14 or anything above about a 12, that's the time to be creating momentum and that's the time to take action. Okay, so what I want you to do is when you're feeling in that place of empowerment, that's the time to be manifesting. Okay, so that 14, the way you feel right now, that's a good manifestation time, because everything you manifest from a place of empowerment is going to show up stronger, faster, better. It's going to be longer lasting. And most importantly, it's going to have a deeper impact. Versus is when you try to force yourself to create from a place of disempowerment. So when you were at a six, you didn't feel empowered. You felt disempowered. Guess what? It's okay.
Ain't no creating in that energy.
But just don't feel like you have to create something. And the thing that I want you to do when you are feeling in this disempowered moment is to take, to invest in self-care. Now, self-care is another buzzword thing, and maybe we don't really know what it means. So let me just say that self-care is just taking space for yourself. And whatever that looks like, if it's a bubble bath, if it's looking in the mirror and holding your heart, if it's making love, if it's going to yoga, whatever, I don't care. And it's also closing your circle in, because the other thing is closing your circle in means that cleanse or clog. Do I need to talk to my sister on the phone if she's just going to talk bad about her boss and make me feel even more uninspired? I don't need to have that conversation right now. You know, what do I, do I need to just crawl in bed and eat ice cream? That's fine. It's okay. It's a clog, but it's a cleanse. So anyway, so that's like the one thing that's super easy that I think you can start sort of implementing right away. The last one that I'll leave you with, and this one's much more introspective, and it's so important then, and it's really about authenticity. I'm going to read to you out of page 158 of Conscious Communications. This excerpt was sent to me by a reader, and I just keep going back to it. It's in chapter 7, which is all about authenticity. The chapter is called Becoming Who You Really Are. So it says, I know it's easier said than done, but what if, as an experiment, you tried to be happy just by becoming who you really are, just living it and stepping into it? To get to who you really are, you have to shed layer after layer of who you've been pretending to be, layers of the person that you know deep down you are not. You are shedding layers of your problems, layers of self-judgment, layers of how others have judged you, layers of unworthiness, fear, worry, and unnecessary responsibility, and layers of beliefs and challenges around what other people think you are, or even worse, think you should be. Now, here's the thing. Authenticity is the key to manifestation. It's the key to manifesting quickly. Okay. So this is this was just confirmed by a friend of mine who spends about half her life in India, and she was working with, I don't know who they are, but whatever people are at the ashram. And this guy who did some sort of Sanskrit reading for her told her that because she had become so authentically herself, that her manifesting was going to get really, really fast. And that's very true for me. So what am I saying? I'm saying the more you show up as who you really are, the faster you will manifest. What does this look like? You have to detach from everything that is not within your goal. Okay. So maybe showing up at that party that you don't really want to go to, that's a clog. Don't do that. Cleanse or clog will fast track your authenticity. But there's this other piece of it, and it's alignment. Okay. And you can't really be in alignment with your highest potential if you have stuff in your past that you have not forgiven yourself for. Okay. And that forgiveness is really wrapped up into your own standards of your own belief systems, the things that you believed were right or wrong based on your childhood. Those things that you think you like, if I said, you know, think of something that you would never tell anyone, immediately something comes to you. And that's still in there, and it's keeping you out of alignment. But like understanding that I made the best choice that I could at the time, and I need like to really forgive myself for this thing, because that's what takes the trauma out of the DNA, is that piece of forgiveness.
Yeah. I love this saying I heard somewhere. They said healing is the application of love to the places inside that hurt. And I think it's that willingness to just give that love within, and yeah, there's just so people know, because I feel like we can hop into a whole nother podcast episode about removing all the layers so that you can be more authentically yourself, because it's a process over time. You know, I've been doing inner work for so long and trying to remove all the judgments and the things and the everything, and it's just a continuous cycle. So,
Dr. Mate says we have 40 layers of these skins. He calls them skins that create this outer shell. And that thing will keep us, those skins is what's keeping us not only from ourselves, you know, like our own higher power, but also from source, from deeper connection in our relationships. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that it's so true and it's so powerful. And it's not like you can't manifest without doing that. You will. But you just get way better at it because the more you are being authentically who you are, even if you think that person is embarrassing, you know, I hate to say come to Jesus, but everybody knows what that means. So I'll just say it, you know, I've had my come to Jesus moments when I really had to like, understand, you know, hey, that time when you like, you feel like you messed up your kids because you yelled at them so much and all of these things that you've done in your past that you think are unforgivable, that the truth is that you did those things out of a place of pain. You know, you did those things. Lewis Howes brilliantly says, hurt people. Yeah. And it's so true, but it's like, okay, you've done that. It's in the past. And it's time to forgive yourself and be able to truly move on. And the more you can do that, the more that you step into your authentic person and you allow, because we're each born with very unique gifts. And we're not taught as a child to cultivate these gifts, but the practice of becoming more authentically the superhuman that you're supposed to be, the more that those skills actually begin to rise up and become the source of many, many things in your life.
Yeah. So good, Mary. Oh, I could keep going on and on with you about this because there's so many more juicier bits that I wanted to continue with you. So I might need to bring you back on for a part two.
Absolutely.
But I really do just want to echo what you were saying is that compassion and forgiveness is so key to ourselves. And that I believe is a lot of the like spiritual cleansing. We talk about unclogging our system. The forgiveness and the compassion is what will unclog what we've been blocking in our hearts. So I've got three more questions for you to close this out. So the first is this, what is something unique about you that most people don't know?
Well, you guys kind of know I've laid a lot of things out on the table. I think some unique thing that people don't necessarily know about me is that I am still a special needs mom because after my child died, I eventually got married and I'm divorced now, but I was married and I had another child and he is on the autism spectrum. And so I have for the last 18 years been raising this child that there's just absolutely no rule book for, but it served me so well because I mean, honestly, Keegan has been the catalyst of shaking off all of those old belief systems in me.
Beautiful. And when you're in a really dark place, Mary, what is your go-to to get out?
Oh, I wrote a whole process on this called 5 Steps to Break Through Your Breakdown. And I will just give you the first step.
Get Mary's book.
It is.
Yes, what's the first step?
It is in the book, but I also wrote a blog about it. That's just called 5 Steps to Break Through Your Breakdown. So if you're not ready to invest in the book, go check out that blog. Anyway, the first step is that you write a list of all of your problems. And Matthew Lieberman of UCLA did a research study that showed that just by when we name our problems, we actually feel better about them because we instantly create dopamine and serotonin in the brain. Now, dopamine is like an immediate happiness hormone, and serotonin is more of a sustainable happiness. So they're both important in different ways. Dopamine is more implicated in like addictions and things, but it's really fascinating because when you're in that dark hole and you don't know what to do and you just do the list, it's like to me, my metaphor is someone threw a flashlight down the hole. And at least now I'm still in the hole, but at least I can
love
see
it. Write it all out. And knowing what you know now, what advice would you give your 10-year-old self?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So I give this advice to my child. I have two children, actually. I give this advice to my 17-year-old every single day. He's actually sick of hearing it. He's like, Mom, do you think I'm going to forget? I'm like, I don't know, but I just want to be sure. Who you marry, if you get married, if you choose to get married in this life, who you marry is the most important decision that you will ever make. Who you decide to have as your life partner is the most critical decision that will determine like the stress, the love, the happiness, the drama, all of these things are very wrapped up into who you choose to partner with. So that's what I wish I would have known at 10. Mm.
All right. And so how can people find you, Mary?
I am super easy to find. So the first place is my website. It is Mary Shores. That's shores.com. And I know that Stephanie has all the links, but I'll just quickly say that you guys are all invited to join my Facebook group. It's called Fearless Ambition. It's just a great way if you like wanted to shoot me a question or something like that. I show up in that group every day. I also love LinkedIn. So if you're on LinkedIn, please find me on there. My big ask is like, hey, download this free gift. It's going to come with a free chapter of the book, so you can check that out. But more importantly, if you resonate with my story today, please go on Amazon, check out the book Conscious Communications, your step-by-step guide to harnessing the power of your words to change your mind, your choices, and your life. Just read the description and like a handful of reviews, and I really believe you'll just know whether this is the book for you or not.
Beautiful. All right. So guys, check out the show notes. All the links are there. Make sure you get Mary's free gift that she's so generously giving of the Daily Desires Diary Bundle. And thank you again, Mary, for being on the show.
Thank you, Stephanie. I hope I lived up to Josh's expectations or
you
standards.
You sure did.
Thank you so much.
All right, my loves. As you know, the stories you tell yourself about yourself become your identity. And that ultimately creates how you feel, and it creates what you experience in your reality. So if you're not feeling your best, or if what you're experiencing in your reality is not what you want, then it's time to rewrite your story. Rewrite who you think you are and what you're capable of. Rewrite the beliefs that are limiting or blocking you from being, doing, and having all that your heart desires. Because this is exactly what Mary did. And remember, what you focus on grows. So make the conscious choice to keep your focus on creating and believing the stories about yourself that are empowering, the ones that will support you, the ones that will unleash your unlimited potential. And if you want some support with breaking free of old patterns that have been causing you to suffer and are blocking you from what you really want, make sure you download my free self-love kickstart that I created just for you. Because self-love opens you up to changing your stories and owning your worth to be, do, and have whatever it is that you desire. And you can download that free gift at stephaniekwong.com/self-love-kickstart. Also, Mary's got her free Daily Desires Diary Bundle, which includes the Daily Desires Diary, a new daily practice to help you reflect, set goals, and take action, as well as a bonus excerpt of Conscious Communications to jumpstart your motivation. Now, the link to download that Daily Desires Diary Bundle is in the show notes page, and that is over at stephaniekwong.com/EP32. And on the show notes page, you're going to find additional links there to connect with Mary. Okay, my friends, if you want to make sure you don't miss an episode, make sure that you are subscribed to the podcast. And if you got value from this episode and if it feels aligned for you, I would deeply appreciate if you'd leave me a 5-star review on iTunes, because that means we can support even more people to rise higher together. All right. I'm going to go ahead and close this out. Until next time, as always, I'm sending you so much love.